This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Resource Center. I'm here with Rohit Talwa, who is a global futurist, award-winning speaker, strategic advisor, and entrepreneur focused on delivering future insights, provoking radical thinking, and enhancing the prospects for humanity. He works with global companies, entrepreneurs, investors, and governments to help them anticipate and respond to the forces and ideas shaping the future. He has a particular focus in the future of meetings, events, travel, tourism, hotels, hospitality, and aviation. He's also the co-author of Designing Your Future and editor of The Future of Business Beyond Genuine Stupidity, Ensuring AI Serves Humanity, The Future Reinvented, Reimagining Life, Society and Business, A Very Human Future, Enriching Humanity in a Digitized World, and Opportunity at the Edge. So you've done lots of work. Of course, Opportunity at the Edge, Change, Challenge and Transformation, The Path of 2025. I want to talk a little bit, Rohit, about the new book, Aftershocks and Opportunities. What are some key takeaways from that book?
Good morning. Well, the book is all about how life might evolve as we go through and beyond the pandemic. And we had 25 future thinkers from around the world share their ideas with us for that book. And really what we're highlighting is that this period of time is a fundamental shift in many, many aspects of life, of business, of how we run our economies. And in particular, I think what we're seeing is that this is a crisis of preparedness, that people have been woken up to the fact that as governments, many weren't prepared. Mm. While some did a fantastic job, many really weren't as prepared as they could be. Mm. As businesses, the same could be true, and as individuals. And really, we're all waking up to the fact that no one can see exactly what the future will hold now. It's so uncertain. Mm. And so we have to be thinking about different possible scenarios. Mm. And most of us like to think about the positive scenarios. Right. And we like to focus on when the economy will pick back up again and how it will improve. But right now, it's so uncertain that actually what's become really clear is that we need to prepare for the worst-case scenario of a prolonged pandemic and a deep economic downturn globally. Right. And we have to think about how we would respond if we knew that was going to happen. What ideas would we come up with? How would we adapt? How would we make money as a business? What would we do as individuals to acquire new skills? Mm. And that's the really interesting place, because if we look back through history, it's often that during a downturn, some of the biggest businesses are born, some of the right. smartest new ideas emerge. And so the real priority now is forcing ourselves to think about that unpleasant scenario that is already unfolding. Mm. And what happens if it takes a couple of years for the pandemic to be eradicated and the economic downturn lasts a couple of years? How are we going to navigate that?
Right. You know, as a futurist and speaking on behalf of futurists in different fields, could we have anticipated a pandemic like this happening and the impact it has had across industry verticals? We know Bill Gates spoke about this in 2015 and no one paid any serious attention.
Well, since around the 1960s, with the growth of air travel, futurists have been talking about the risks of a pandemic, and not just futurists, but health experts, epidemiologists, virologists, they've all been highlighting the risks are there. And some governments have done very good preparedness work, so they were able to respond very fast and very effectively, and the crisis has been minimized for them. Mm. Others were much slower to react, or their preparedness exercises weren't done very well, and they are now in crisis, and some of the biggest economies in the world are really in that situation. You know, you look at the US, you look at the UK, you look at India, you look at Pakistan, Brazil, you know, whether they're big physical economies or just large numbers of population, they're in trouble because they weren't as well prepared. And now the pandemic is increasing in some countries and the number of infections are increasing. And so really, we've been talking for a long time about how to prepare for these things, how to make sure that you've got the right resources in place that you've got the right skills and people know what to do, and all of that is distributed, so you're not controlling it all centrally,
right.
And that you have good communications to tell the public what's going on, you update them with the science, you update them with the policy choices, and that you keep learning through the progress of the pandemic. So you see what is and isn't working, and you adapt your response to that. Mm. And again, the very best countries of this are doing an incredible job here. New Zealand mm-hmm. had no infections for some time.
Right.
And then it had a quarantine on arrival for any visitors. And somehow it let a couple of British people in without testing them properly.
Right.
And they infected a whole bunch of other people. And instantly, the next day when they found out about it, the New Zealand Prime Minister put someone from the military in charge of the process because they didn't want to mess around. And that's really good responsiveness. That's learning, that's adapting, and trying to make sure you can be safe. And so whilst we don't know exactly what the virus is going to be, we know they're going to come. We know there'll be more.
Right.
We know there'll probably be more serious ones in the future. Mm. And so we should be learning from this and getting our act together and treating this almost as a dress rehearsal for something more severe.
Wow. You recently conducted a webinar on the future of meetings, events, travel, tourism, hotels and hospitality, and you drew up four scenarios and how these might play out from 2020 to 2023. Can you share some of those insights?
Yeah, so the scenarios are based on looking at what are the most important forces that could play out and how they could interact. And we focus on the ones that are most important and also most uncertain because they give you the best insight. And so we looked at two critical forces and their interplay. One was the evolution of the pandemic from poorly contained to globally eradicated.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was the economic downturn. Or the economic recovery, I should say, from a deep and prolonged downturn through to a vibrant economic rebound. So that gave us four scenarios.
Right.
One, which we call the long goodbye, which is where the scenario is poorly contained and you have a deep downturn. And that's the one that's probably the most damaging for the meetings, travel and tourism sector, because that's the one where really everything is on hold. And it's the one that's hardest to prepare for, because that means that every time an economy opens up, it probably closes back down again quite quickly because we get second and third peaks.
Mm.
And people are reluctant to travel. Countries put quarantine on arrival arrangements in or ban travel from other countries. And you get a very long, prolonged pandemic because we don't get in a vaccination until about 2022 in this one. And the result is that the economic downturn is also prolonged. Every time we try and open up, we end up shutting things down again because we can't control the situation. We see what's happening in the US at the moment. And we see a lot of redundancies in some markets because of this, a lot of business failures, and that knocks on through. And all of that has an impact in terms of people's willingness to travel, their willingness to organize live events, their willingness to attend live events. So that's the worst case scenario, and that's one where we really have to think hard about mm-hmm. how we're going to repurpose our facilities to do other things during that time period. There's a second scenario where we get the pandemic under control, but we sacrifice the economy in the short term for that so that we really get good control of the pandemic. And that in particular requires that we treat this as a global phenomenon. We know that the pandemic travels around the world in seat 43C of an airplane. It travels with people wherever they go.
Mm.
So whilst any place is at risk, we're all at risk. So in this one, there's a lot more focus on the big nations, the big global institutions working together to help the poorest nations with the most fragile health infrastructure to really get effective procedures and policies in place to get the vaccination in place so that it can be eradicated.
Mm.
So whilst we have a deep economic downturn in this, when we come out the other side, we're much more robust.
Right.
The third scenario is where the pandemic is poorly contained, but we start to drive the economy again. Mm. And that's what's happening in a lot of countries. They're accepting that they can't get rid of the pandemic until there's a vaccine. In that scenario, what you see is lots of local lockdowns where certain areas with high infection rates get shut down. Mm-hmm. And we try and protect the wealth creators and the people working in businesses from them. Some government support and government stimulus to try and get the economy moving. In that one, you'll see a sort of hesitant growth of travel, growth of meetings, but a reluctance again from businesses and their insurers to let people go to events in case there's liability risks. Mm. And businesses themselves trying to control their costs still because they're uncertain about the recovery. Mm. The final scenario is the most optimistic one, where we get the pandemic under control within the next couple of years and the economy bounces back. We give businesses stimulus packages, but we tie those to improvements in innovation, right, job creation. The money given to individuals is more tied to them retraining. There's a lot of focus on retraining to new skills. Mm. There's investment in Green New Deal technologies and in new ventures. And it's a more vibrant outlook. Everything isn't perfect here, but that's the one where industries can return with more confidence. People will move back to having live events. Travelers will be more willing to travel under their own steam, knowing they can go anywhere. Mm. The quarantine on arrival rules will disappear. The travel bans will disappear. Mm. And gradually, over a two-year period, things start to get much better from a health perspective and an economic perspective. And all of that benefits travel, tourism, hotels, hospitality, and meetings and events. So, you know, those four different scenarios, and what we're saying is don't pick the one you like.
Right.
Pick the, you know, think about what you would do under each scenario, and then think about what you would do in the worst case scenario.
Right.
And don't just hope for the best, plan for the worst.
Right. And it's a really a test on leadership, isn't it, in all these different countries. You talk also about some strategies, 10 strategies on how to anticipate all this, but we'll discuss that in just a moment. Rohit Talwar, a global futurist, here speaking to me on Resource Center, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and more. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Resource Center. Good morning, Frida Liu here. I'm speaking to Rohit Talwar, who is a global futurist, award-winning speaker, strategic advisor, and entrepreneur focused on delivering future insights, provoking radical thinking, and enhancing the prospects for humanity. We're discussing the future of meetings, events, travel, tourism, hotels, and hospitality. Early on, you talked about possible scenarios, and it's not about, well, you know, choosing the best scenario and what we need to do. But you also discussed 10 strategies on how to anticipate, understand, and respond to critical shifts shaping these markets. You know, what are some of them?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is that we all need to get better prepared. We need to be thinking about how we can respond, whatever the scenario is. Mm. And we need to be doing a lot of learning. We need to be learning about the new markets that are growing that might create opportunities for us if we're in the event sector, the geographic markets that are safest that we want to target in the travel sector. And we need to be learning new skills to be able to adapt to this new way of working, learning about new markets, learning new ways of working. A lot of people have had to learn how to work remotely, but it's really about learning that navigates us through this. The second thing is around very deep industry collaboration. We need to make sure that the traveler experience is consistent. So the testing, the distancing, the level of protection in terms of masks and gloves, from leaving your home through the airport, through the airline, to the arrival airport, to the hotel at the other end of a convention center, we need to make sure that the traveler has a very consistent experience and that the industry is really working to make sure that the traveler or the event visitor feels reassured that their interests are really being taken into account. And we're seeing quite a lot of variability at the moment. So that's something that I think has to be tackled, but the industry needs to work together on this. Mm. I think one of the big areas that we're saying we need to think about is if you have a deep downturn that's going to last for some time, then we know that our facilities might not be as well used. And although it sounds negative to think about, well, what if we can't use our hotel as a hotel or our convention center as a convention center? Mm. It might sound negative to say, let's think about alternative uses, but right now that's exactly what we've got to do. Right. So some convention centers have been converted to hospitals. What we know is that schools need space to do physical distancing properly, so we can rent out space to them. Mm. We can create pop-up retail markets, because we know a lot of retailers are closing but still have stock. They still want to be a retailer, but they can't afford their outlet anymore. Well, we can create pop-up retail stalls in our meeting space where there's enough physical distancing between the stalls, and also we can guide people around so that they can still do their retail, people can still buy, but it's in a different location. And we need to start thinking about what are those clever ways we can use our facilities to earn revenue while we're waiting for meetings or tourists to come back. The next thing is about making sure that we're looking at new ways of attracting customers in, new partnerships, new relationships, to bring the traveler to us, and new experiences so that their whole experience feels secure. Mm. What can we do from, you know, the point of arrival to the point of departure to still allow them to enjoy a destination but safely? So that might mean organizing more trips to local attractions and booking with the attraction dedicated times for the travelers or the visitors from your hotel to go to that attraction, knowing that they'll be the only ones there. And really, it's that kind of level of thinking that we need to be putting in to make sure that we are protecting the traveler, but also making sure they're having a great experience and trying to ensure our own financial viability. And then I think the final one I would touch on here is being willing to experiment.
Right.
We don't know exactly what's happening right now. We don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, let alone the next 6 months or 2 years. So we have to be willing to try experiments and see what might work and see how that plays out for us. So, for example, if we're a hotel, you know, what happens if we close our dining room and we only do delivery to people's door? You know, how long does it take to do that? What level of customer complaints do we get or satisfaction do we have? Can we broaden the menu of options because we can bring in food from outside then? You know, what can we do to experiment to enhance the experience but do it all in an effective, physically distanced and secure manner? So that experimentation, I think, becomes really, really important.
Right.
And that willingness to try ideas that we would have rejected in the past really becomes important.
Right. And you talk about
underlying all this, I say, is learning.
Right.
And the other is about making sure that people don't just talk about the reasons why it can't happen or it shouldn't happen or that's not the way we do things, but really opening the mindsets and putting in charge of these experiments the people who want to try, the people who are most interested, and surrounding them with the support to enable them to take bigger and bigger experiments, because we don't know how long this is going to last. And we have to ensure the financial viability of our facilities.
Do you think that's going to be the biggest challenge, to build flexibility, adaptability and experimentation as core skills and part of the DNA of organizations? Is it a case of do or die, literally?
Absolutely. You know, those are now the most important issues I hear. And I'm on a lot of industry dialogues. I read a lot of the conversation. And there's a very clear difference between those who feel like they've given up or they're just waiting for something and complaining about each, you know, destination that's closing down or not allowing visitors or each event that's getting cancelled. And at the other end of the spectrum, you have the people who are just full of ideas, full of experiments, trying something new, willing to partner with different players, asking questions of the travellers about what they need to feel reassured. I'm really thinking through that whole experience or trying to create innovative ideas. I'm hearing, for example, of destination management companies and Convention and Visitor Bureaus creating online guides to their city because people can't visit it physically, and creating the next level of, you know, the equivalent of the walking tour you might do around the city, so that they can create some sort of new revenue stream for themselves. So you need that experimentation, that willingness to try, that recognition that this is uncertain. And all of that requires strong leadership and an open mindset.
Right. How can people get hold of you, Rohit? And, you know, I know you have a lot of resources as well.
Yep. So you can find me at rohit@fastfuture.com. You can find all of our resources, our books, our reports, and the details of all our webinars at our website, which is www.fastfuture.com.
Right. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I've been speaking to Rohit Talwar, talking about the future of meetings, events, travel, tourism, hotels, and hospitality. This is Resource Center, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.